Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood.
Follow on Twitter at @TweetJHood.
What's up and welcome in. This is Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood. Weeknights at 7 right here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN Chicago app with open phone lines for you. 312-332-ESPN, 332-3776 is the telephone number. Hit me up on Twitter, twitter.com, tweetjhood, also Instagram at IGJHood. Great to have you in as we get a chance to hear from Ryan Hollins. That'll be coming up in a half hour from now. We'll get his thoughts about the NBA in the bubble. There's already issues already, and some interesting storylines around the NBA, which we'll get to coming up at 7:30 with Ryan. And, of course, an hour from now, you know what we do at 8 o'clock, right? 8 o'clock. Every night at 8 o'clock. Come on. Summer football. We are celebrating football every night at 8 o'clock. As we always have special guests, we will preview the NFC North at 8 o'clock. Packers, Vikings, Lions. What can the Bears expect for the 2020 campaign? We'll review the NFC North coming your way in 1 hour from now right here on Chicago's Home for Sports. Bill Barnwell, who is a guest on this program from time to time, we get a chance to talk to him maybe two or three times a year, and that is not necessarily always in football season. We catch him sometimes in the offseason just getting his thoughts on how he looks at the Bears and everyone else in the NFL. And so my view of the Bears might be different than most, because it's one thing to have a narrow focus on what the blue and orange are going to do this year and nothing else. Well, my viewpoint over the years has been able to expand to not just looking at the Bears and what happens at Howell's Hall, but what happens around the division, what happens in the conference, what happens in all of the NFL, because it's one thing to have a myopic view of the Bears, and it's another thing to be able to look at how organizations are able to run and be perennial playoff teams and run like a well-oiled machine. See, when you are a Bears fan like I am, you have no other choice but to be able to look outside of the state of Illinois and try to figure out how the Bears can be able to be that team. That team where every time I take the mic, the phone lines are lit talking about the Bears, where we're trying to figure out, okay, 11-5, got to the playoffs, fell short of their goal. How can they capitalize? 12-4 the next year, couple of playoff wins, fell short in the Super Bowl or fell short in the conference game. Those are question marks that I wish that I could be able to address every single year. It would be like me doing radio in Boston, right? Talking about the Patriots or talking about other teams that have knocked on the door of the playoffs, like the Saints. But I'm not in New Orleans. I'm not in Boston. I'm in Chicago. And we're talking about the Bears every single year. And we're talking about how the team is a team that is good, but not good enough. What we saw last year is football hell. 2 years ago, 12-4. Get to the playoffs. Clearly, special teams was not on par. They fell short of their goal. Last year, you're just 500, and that's just football hell. When you are a horrible team, you know, like Jacksonville was last year or the Bengals was last year, okay, you got room for Dolphins in some ways. You got room for improvement. When you're at the top of your game like the 49ers and when you are a team like Kansas City that was able to win the Super Bowl, I'm like, okay, all right, can we do it again? Can we get back to the mountaintop again? But when you're in the middle and just stuck in mediocrity, you're just like, oh, no, not again, right? You don't know which direction this will go. This is why I'm on pins and needles for the season to start. If we get a season, I'm interested in finding out what it looks like. Because everything is predicated on offense. We talk so much about quarterbacks and looking at offense, and because that's the thing that stirs the drink in this league. It's not about defense. It's not about always the draft. It's about personnel on offense. And so I read Bill Barnwell's piece ranking offensive weapons for all 32 teams in 2020. Barnwell picks the best and the worst. And again, this is the opinion of someone who is a mover and shaker when it comes to NFL opinion. So, of course, if there's a list, you know I'm going to read it. And you know I'm going to talk to you about it because I want to get your reaction to it. So if you missed it. So here's what it says. It goes through the worst to the best. Actually, it usually starts at 1. This time it starts at 32. So we'll go backwards. So Washington is at 32. And by the way, Washington does not have a nickname yet. All that pyro and ballyhoo and all this, you know, hubbubaloo about the new name. It's like the only thing that we got from Washington was we're not going to be called the Redskins anymore. It's like, okay, so what's the name? Still don't know. Okay, so typical former Redskins. You talk about the Bears and their organization. Boy, there's some terrible organizations from a PR standpoint in this league. Washington is 32 on this list, and you can understand why. When we talk about young quarterbacks, we never get to Dwayne Haskins because he still has to prove something, and they still, under Ron Rivera, have to be able to kind of reinvent who they are and who they were. Poorly run organization, but you got Ron Rivera who knows what he's doing, so it's going to take some time. So Washington's 32. Jacksonville's 31, and you can understand why Jacksonville's 31. I mean, trying to figure out the weapons around Jacksonville, and plus last offseason, how they unplugged the team pretty much. I can't believe an NFL team would just completely tank the way they did last year. I was disappointed in Jacksonville, a team that was on the precipice of getting to the Super Bowl a couple of years ago. Duval County, one of the strong defenses in the National Football League for a while, and they just unplugged the organization, just got rid of quality players. Like, you're not, what are you, the Miami Marlins? You're just going to tank? You can't do that in the NFL, but Jacksonville did. And I just think that's the wrong thing to do. So Miami's 30th. As much as I like their front office and what they were able to do, you can understand why they're 30th. They still got to figure out what they have in Tua Tagovailoa as their quarterback. They still have to figure out some of the parts there. So you're 30th. The Jets are 29th in this list. You know, the Jets turned things around toward the end of the season. I think they went 6-2 in their last 8 games. But they started off really rough. Really, really rough. And it's not a good sign when players are demanding a trade. That is also an issue with the Jets. So they're 29th on this list. So we've gone Washington, Jacksonville, Miami, Jets. As we talk about this with Jonathan Hood on Under the Hood on ESPN 1000, the ESPN Chicago app. So I go to 28, and I found the Bears. 28 out of 32 teams. Ranking offensive weapons for all 32 NFL teams in 2020, Barnwell has the Bears at 28. See, I didn't even do what I normally do and just go through all the best of the best because, you know, we went through like 3 breaks before I got to the Bears. So I cut to the chase and gave you the Bears at 28. Allen Robinson deserves better than this. That's the first sentence about the Bears. 17th best offense in the NFL, according to Bill Barnwell last year, 9th in 2018. And the first sentence, Allen Robinson deserves better than this. Having spent his entire career catching passes from Blake Bortles and Mitchell Trubisky, he will get a comparative upgrade this season if the Bears start Nick Foles. The former Penn State star held up his end of the bargain a year ago, racking up 1,100 yards and 7 touchdowns on 154 targets. Anthony Miller finished the season with 656 yards and averaged nearly 1.5 yards per route run. But drops and shoulders injuries definitely were a concern in his first 2 seasons. He goes on to say that the other weapons on this roster all failed to live up to their expectations, although much of that was due to injuries. He's talking about Tariq Cohen, 7 drops on 103 targets. He says players like Cohen and Ted Ginn Jr. and Cordarrelle Patterson could be intriguing supplemental pieces in the right scheme, but it's difficult to count on Matt Nagy making the most of their ability. Boy, that's a strong statement. I could do an hour on that. Like, he says that with Ginn and Cohen and Patterson, they could be good supplemental pieces, which also is a shot. Supplemental pieces meaning that they're not really stars or guys that can make a difference. They're just supplemental pieces. I'll do an hour on that, too. difficult to count on Matt Nagy making the most of their ability. Free agent signee Jimmy Graham's contract was universally panned, but even leaving money aside, he was anonymous last season in the Packers' offense. Desperate for a second receiving option and turns 34 in November. David Montgomery is the big hope for the Bears to climb up these rankings, but as a rookie, he was below average by every running measure I could find. Go Bears! Yeah, 28th on this list. Now, here's the thing. The Bears could easily turn this around by having Foles have the lion's share of the time at quarterback. But maybe that's not going to happen. I'll explain why next on UTH.
This is Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood.
Hi, everybody.
On ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
This is Chicago's home for sports.
Stream ESPN 1000 easily on the all-new ESPN Chicago app.
You're listening to Under the Hood on ESPN 1000.
Ryan Hollins, NBA analyst, will join us at 7:30, give his thoughts on what's going on with the bubble in Orlando. And of course, we know Russell Westbrook has coronavirus and players trying to leave already. It's a weird scenario. It's tempting fate. It's definitely happening through COVID-19. Talking to you about the Bears right here on ESPN 1000, the ESPN Chicago app. 312-332-ESPN, 332-3776 is our phone number. Anything in our conversation about the Bears and the rest of the NFL that stand out to you, I'll definitely take your phone calls. Again, we got a guest at the bottom, so I want to get your calls in here and also your tweets at TweetJHood. Ranking offensive weapons for all 32 teams in 2020. Now, the thing about these lists, I get a kick out of it because I find it intriguing on how some look at the future for the NFL, the future season. You know, Kansas City is number one on this list, and some things I disagree with this list. Like, for instance, Kansas City is number one, and you're going to give Patrick Mahomes the benefit of the doubt. Whether or not you think there's going to be slippage or not, that guy is that young man and that offense works. Number two on this list is Cleveland. And that is just based on looking at the roster and thinking that, well, at some point Baker Mayfield will come into his own. I don't see that. There's many in Vegas that are trying to put the Browns in the playoffs, and that may happen. I don't foresee that because I don't believe in Baker Mayfield. But lists like this has the Browns second, the Cowboys are third, and whether Dak Prescott's going to get a new deal or not, I think that he's really good with Cooper and Gallup, CeeDee Lamb, and good players like that around him. So I think that he's going to be fine. Ezekiel Elliott, of course, running the football. I think that they're going to be fine offensively. Now, there's a ceiling to their success. How good can they be for the long haul in 2020? The Buccaneers are fourth. I think that is too low. Or actually too high in this list because they're fourth, because Tom Brady is, 46, 47? There's going to be a culture shock in Tampa, and people are not going to be ready for it. I can already see the narratives written like, oh, Tom's old. Well, no blank, he's old. he's not with Bill Belichick. He's not with the Patriots. He's with Tampa. He's with my guy drinking Crown Royal on the sidelines. Yeah, there's going to be definitely a difference between Brady the Patriot and Brady the Buccaneer. The Panthers are fifth in this list, way too high in this list. When we talk about young quarterbacks and rosters, we never talk about Kyle Allen. There's a reason. So, yeah, but here's what I look at, though, with this list, though. When I'm going through the bad teams and questionable teams, the Bears deserve to be in that spot because of their inconsistency. And so my point is that when we look at the rest of the NFL and we compare the best of the best, in my viewpoint, like Kansas City, when I take a look at New Orleans, when I take a look at Philly, other teams like that, and look how they're run, and you compare it to the Bears, it's like night and day. It's night and day. And so I can turn a blind eye to this and tell you that they're going to be much better than 28th. Well, what does that really mean? What does that really mean when Baltimore has Lamar Jackson? What does that really mean when the 49ers and what they were able to do to get to the Super Bowl last year with Jimmy Garoppolo. What does it mean when Minnesota, once again, will be knocking on the door on the NFC North, as well as the Packers, will be 1-2 in any way that you want to put it in the NFC North? What does that mean? What does that mean when you have Russell Wilson as a future Hall of Fame quarterback with the Seattle Seahawks? They're 15th in this list, but I know they're top 10. They don't do anything special offensively, the Seahawks, but they are efficient and they get it done. What does that say for teams like the Eagles, as I mentioned, and up-and-coming teams as well with young quarterbacks that are showing some signs? See, it's one thing to have hyperbole and just root for the Bears and click your heels and close your eyes and hope that they win the Super Bowl, but we have to look into reality. And some don't want to do that, but the reality is that when we look at Tariq Cohen and Ted Ginn Jr. and Cordarrelle Patterson and David Montgomery, and we're looking at Anthony Miller and as well as Allen Robinson and the weapons that Trubisky or Foles have to deal with, they're not bad. They're not bad at all. They're not at the very bottom. But everything is predicated on whether or not they can run the offense that Nagy wants them to run. And with Nagy coming over from Kansas City, you know, it might be Kansas City's playbook or some of it, but you need Kansas City's players to run Kansas City's offense. So that's the whole point of this. As we talk about this here on ESPN 1000, the ESPN Chicago app, I believe, let me go back and think now, and somebody's going to listen to the podcast of the night that the schedule dropped, and correct me on this. I believe I had the Bears winning 9 games this upcoming season.
You did, Hood.
Did I say 9?
Yep.
So 9-7, I think, is what I said when we did the schedule show. And so maybe that's good enough. Maybe that's good enough to get to the playoffs. Maybe it's not. But that's just granular success from 8-8. That's not good enough, especially when the rosters of the Vikings and the Packers are better. And again, we will review the NFC North coming up at 8 o'clock for our summer of football. But that's something to think about for sure. Like, that's just one list. But I can give you other lists and Pro Football Focus and how everyone else looks at the Bears, and they're just holding their stomachs laughing. Like, the defense took a step back, but they're still very good, and the offense is just the blanks, the drizzling blanks. And and you know what? That's not hyperbole. That's not a sports radio thing to say, because the numbers speak for themselves. It's just got to get better. Something about Cam Newton I just want to mention, too. So Cam Newton is with the New England Patriots. And I've been holding this back for a few days because I was wanting to get the reaction of not just me, but others regarding Cam Newton being with New England. And you know, the prevailing theme that I continue to hear about Cam Newton is, you know, Cam's just not a fit for New England. And what I continue to think when I hear that, Cam's not a fit for New England. Cam in New England is not a fit for you. That's what I'm thinking as I hear that. It sounds like Cam's not a fit for New England, and I'm hearing it back as, you don't think that Cam is a fit in New England. We've been seeing Tom Brady and Bill Belichick at the, you know, locked in step. They've been attached at the hip for years. And now things change. It changes because Tom Brady had enough of Bill Belichick and New England, and so he decides that he wants to leave, and now he's with Tampa. And I got no problem with that. He wanted to do something different. Belichick wanted to get rid of Brady probably 3 or 4 years ago because he saw the asset, the player, as someone that was up in age, and he wanted to be able to get younger at the position. And so people thought, okay, so is Belichick just going to go with Jarrett Stidham? And Belichick waited and waited for someone to pick up that veteran quarterback, Cam Newton. No one did. And so he picked him up because that's what Belichick does. We get so caught up in the hot take society of, oh, so Bill's going to tank for Trevor Lawrence. Yeah, because we always know Bill Belichick is someone who wants to purposely lose games. It's just people, I swear, the business has changed so much over the years that I've been doing this, where people feel that they just want to be right with some hot take so they can hold up the sound and say, look at me, I was right, Bill tanked. So you get Trevor Lawrence in there because he wants the Patriots to go 2-14. No. The greatest winner that we've seen in our lifetime wants to tank. Who does that? Who does that? Not Bill Belichick, clearly, right? So then the hot take is, well, you know, Cam's going to sit behind Jarrett Stidham. Like, we didn't know who Jarrett Stidham was until Brady decided he goes to go to Tampa. Anyway, I just find the narrative about Cam Newton fascinating. Yes, we know Cam Newton is flamboyant. He looks like a pro wrestler because he's got his colors and the way he dresses. And he's a fashion plate, and he speaks off the top of his head. Not a bad teammate, just different. You ever been around a cat that was just different from everyone else, where the person's cool, but he's just different. He dresses differently, has different views of the world. That's who Cam Newton is. But I love already the fascination of Cam, because Cam's not Tom Brady. Cam is someone who is completely different from Tom. The crazy hair, the rippling muscles. The dude is got videos out already looking forward to being with the Patriots, and it's just a one-year deal. What people are forgetting, and I'll mention it, and someone will take this and use it for their show, and that is with Cam Newton's in a prove-it year. So if people think that he's just going to be going out, just wilding out and just being separate from the team and doing his own thing, well, in a prove-it year, he's not going to do that. What he's going to do is he's going to try to prove to everyone that as he sat at home waiting for the phone to ring, that the Patriots picked up the phone and he's going to do right by the Patriots because he feels like he's healthy enough to help the Patriots. I've said this all along about Cam, though. Cam is not the Cam from Auburn. Cam is not the Cam when he first came to Carolina. It's an older Cam, and I want to know if that ankle and that foot is healthy. If it is, Cam can be able to be more mobile, move around the pocket, and do some things. And so, again, I don't expect the Patriots to be in the Super Bowl this upcoming season. But the idea that Cam Newton, because he wears, you know, a lot of different colors and wears a weird hat, and he has garish suits and all that, he's different. But when it comes to the field, when Cam's right, Cam is going to be a very solid quarterback in this league. We question Cam Newton, but we're cool with Jarrett Stidham. Like, it's just like we're good with Nick Foles, but not Cam Newton. I mentioned this, I believe, yesterday on yesterday's show, and we're going to hear from Cam Newton in just a moment. I mentioned this about the difference between Cam Newton and, say, Nick Foles. The Bears also had a chance to be able to get Cam Newton in here. But you know, as Cam Newton walks through the doors at Hiles Hall, you know that he would want to be the starter. It's not none of this playtime where, oh, well, Trubisky's going to be the starter because he's been the starter the whole time. And so if he plays poorly, then we'll break glass and bring you in. Well, Nick Foles is not going to say boo to anybody, right? So Nick Foles is totally good with being the backup because that's what he's been. That's why he fits the narrative for the Bears. Imagine Cam Newton on the Bears. Cam Newton would take over the starting position just like that. And again, maybe you're not getting to the Super Bowl, but you're going to get a guy that has won before. And I can't say the same thing for Mitch Trubisky on a regular basis. Yeah, Cam would have been great as a Bear in blue and orange. But you know the Bears weren't going to play that. It's not because Cam's black. It's because Cam was never going to be a backup to that Trubisky. So Cam Newton is coming in with a chip on his shoulder in a big way because he feels like he's had some league-wide disrespect. Listen to what Cam Newton had to say. Cam Newton, Todd Gurley, OBJ, Victor Cruz, conversation about how Cam Newton feels like, hey, someone should have picked me up.
I was like, bro, like they playing with me, and I had to count the days how long I was unemployed. It was 86 nights. 86 nights, like, it's just like that's 3 months.
Yeah, almost 90 days.
You see what I'm saying? And I'm going through it, and I'm like, okay, early on, like, people going to get signed, and I'm looking at them, and I'm like, you can't say I'm old because people older than me getting signed.
Especially at your position.
Hello. You know. Then I'm like, you can't say it's about injury because people who are more injured than me are getting signed. So I'm like, okay, cool. Like, whoa, where we at? Then you can't say the talent. So I'm like, hold on. Okay, now I'll be the first person to tell you, these last 2 years, I haven't been putting the best film on tape. That's just honest. But at the same time, I'm like, okay, there's other people that's been putting film out there that's getting picked up. And I'm like, whoa.
Okay. Not even picked up. They got the starting job.
You know what I'm saying? Like I'm feeling disrespected. Like, I'm feeling like, bro, because every team at one point had to say, okay, fellas, Cam Newton, what do we think? Pass. You feel me? And that's the disrespect that I feel. So it's not like I'm I feel vindicated to some degree, but I'm searching for, I'm going at next all year, because it's like, at one point I did feel, and I still do feel like a part of me is left because I gave an organization everything. What I gave, I don't think other people were willing to give. And it was times where I knew I wasn't supposed to be playing. But off of the mere fact of Luke Kuechly, Thomas Davis, you know what I'm saying? Like DJ Moore, Christian McCaffrey, D'Angelo Williams, Jonathan Stewart, you know, Steve Smith. I'm like, bro, I can't give up on them. Like, you know what I'm saying? We play the ultimate team sport in offensive football. That's the ultimate team sport. Because if the guard don't do his job, I can't do my job. Who is O? You know what I'm saying? Who is a Todd Gurley if the guard don't do, if the center don't snap the ball, if O don't block on the perimeter, how can TG eat? That's the ultimate team. We need a collective group of 11 people doing one thing, not one guy trying to do 11 things.
So when we hear Cam Newton's not a fit, I think that is, from some people's standpoint, that they don't see Cam Newton and Bill Belichick standing side by side. Well, it's going to happen in 2020. Some thoughts about the bubble and the NBA in Orlando. What is happening with the NBA? It's right around the corner. We'll talk to Ryan Hollins next on Under the Hood.
This is Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports. It's Under the Hood. Follow us on the gram at IGJ Hood and at ESPN underscore Chicago. This is Chicago's home for sports, ESPN 1000.
Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood, weeknights at 7 here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN Chicago app. We will go around the NFL for the summer of football. We'll take a look at the NFC North. We will preview the Packers, the Vikings, and the Lions. What can we expect from the three teams in the NFC North? We will address that coming up 8 o'clock with Summer of Football right here on ESPN 1000. Ryan Hollins covers the NBA like a blanket. And Ryan Hollins, a friend of the program, with us here on ESPN 1000. Ryan, Jonathan Hood, thanks so much for your time.
What's up, brother? How you doing, man?
Don't start with a chuckling. Don't start with that. Could you first of all, I want to know, I mean, you and Haywood are tearing up Instagram. You guys are together doing your own show on Instagram almost on a daily basis, are you not?
Yes, sir, man. Well, even bigger than Instagram, Opinionated Seven Footers, we make Instagram content. We've got actually on YouTube, iTunes, and Spotify, the Opinionated Seven Footers podcast will be interview guests like we just did Chauncey Billups, Grant Hill, Jamal Crawford. I mean, many more, man. Gary Payton. I mean, down the line, man. And we got some gold coming up next. So, I mean, it's been a lot of fun, man.
I like that. I enjoy it. You know, I'm tuning in because it's always good to hear two opinionated seven footers go back and forth on the topics of the day. So you guys are having fun with that. I enjoy that.
Yeah, hey, appreciate it, bro. You know that, man. You didn't, like, we don't get anything by you. You find a way of seeing everything. I'm thinking like, you know, okay, Jonathan didn't see that. He's like, hey, remember you tripped trying to walk to your car last week? Or, what were you thinking, man?
Well, I'm a fan, so I like good content, even if it is you tripping on your own feet.
Oh,
so I want to get your thoughts because you've asked the audience this, so I'll ask you this myself about being in this bubble in Orlando. If you had your druthers, you got family, you know COVID-19 is strong, would you play?
I absolutely would play from two different angles. One, I'm going to trust that the NBA has put billions or millions of dollars, whatever price tag you want to put behind it, but between it working. Two, if the players don't play, the owners can come to the table and rip up the CBA. Not to mention that when it comes time for negotiations, I've never seen one player say that he wants to take less unless if he's Tim Duncan and Manu Ginobili, you know, trying to keep the Spurs together for another championship run. That's the only other scenario where players would be willing to take less money. And I say that because you have to understand the business of basketball, man. If you make good on the sponsorship ads and the TV rights, and we're talking about Turner, we're talking about ESPN, we're talking about Gatorade, McDonald's, all those sponsors pay a lot of money to see basketball. They don't pay for you to voluntarily sit at home. And my hat goes off to all these sponsors because they've stayed patient knowing that no one could have predicted COVID-19. It is hitting all of us. So, you know, from a player standpoint, from a professional standpoint, if you don't have any risk of being sick or some problem, you should be there playing basketball, man.
I want to get your thoughts on the Ben Simmons news. Ben Simmons is really polarizing. You can't find five people in a barbershop to be able to agree on what Ben Simmons is. It's not even negative, Ryan. He's just trying to figure out, like, what is he going to be? Do you see him exclusively as a power forward for the long haul?
Man, I don't see him as a power forward right now. Mm-hmm. I mean, this the honest God to God truth. You can put him at power forward, but he's not a power forward. He's going to bring the ball up court. He's going to attack the basket, or he's going to go into a dribble handoff with one of the wing players, something that he's always done. And he's kind of like, if you didn't have Joel Embiid down low, the entire floor would be opened up for Ben Simmons. And I think there's a lot of heat at Ben Simmons right now because he doesn't shoot jumpers. And to me, not so much that he doesn't shoot jumpers. I'll tell you, as a former player, you know, competing against a younger LeBron James, LeBron wasn't the greatest shooter, Jonathan. You remember that.
Mm-hmm.
And our scouting report would say, hey, like let LeBron shoot the basketball. And in the beginning of games, first half of games, LeBron would get up a number of three-point shots. Second half of the games, he was attacking the basket. He was creating for others. But he allowed himself to grow into a really good shooter in the NBA. It's fair to say LeBron James has developed a really good three-point shot and off the bounce, but he took the shots. My grief and all the former players that I speak to when they talk about Ben Simmons, it's not just that he hasn't improved, because we know he gets out and works on his game. He plays pickup. He does that. But, like, he doesn't take it into the games. He's still scared to shoot. Maybe some of that you can say is on Brett Brown, but this man has enough equity in the system, in that Philadelphia basketball system, to where he can take a three-pointer a game. And, like, what the heck would Brett Brown say about it? I mean, go ahead and shoot. Airball that thing by 15 feet, but, you know, take the shot and figure it out, and he won't take them.
Brett Brown is yellow. That's what he is. He's yellow. He's yellow.
Oh,
well, he is. You know why? Because we talked to Ryan Hollins with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000, the ESPN Chicago app. He's yellow. I mean, he comes across like Mayor Quimby. He's just like, you know, Ben, he guaranteed me that he would shoot a three a game. It's like, well, like, wait. You're the head coach, man. It's not like you, you know, are going to rule with an iron fist, but can't you finesse Ben into be able to shoot the basketball? I mean, what kind of power do you have as a head coach that you can't get one of your guys to shoot the ball? Yeah, if it's going to be an air ball, it's not going to be on Shaqton the Fool. People know that he's got issues, but he can work it out though. Why can't Brett Brown be better? That's what I'm saying.
It's hard for me to put this on Brett Brown, man. Like, if your coach says for you to shoot the basketball and you don't shoot the basketball, the only other option is put Ben Simmons on the bench. And with no Jimmy Butler, it's really, really hard to put Ben Simmons on the bench. You get what I'm saying? Like, if Jimmy was there and J.J. Redick and, you know, you had a couple Tobias Harris, you got a couple other guys, you may say, okay, I can put him on the bench. But this team right now, he's all you got. You got to figure it out a way to make it work. And like I said earlier, Johnson, like, dude, he's been playing power forward. He can guard. If you watch Ben Simmons, let's reel it back. If you watch Ben Simmons, bro, he's one of the most talented players, just raw talent that we had ever seen. You compare his skill set to LeBron James because there's not too many guys around 6'9" that can guard all five positions, handle the ball full court, and have legit court vision. When I say court vision, not that he just gets assists. He can anticipate a guy getting open, hit him in stride for a three-point shot or a layup. That's when I talk about vision. That's where the frustration sets in. When you have the label of a more athletic Magic Johnson, that's the excitement that people had around Ben Simmons. And Jonathan, you remember, bro, I came on the show a couple times early and I said, hey, Philadelphia's not coming out the East. And, you know, Stephen A. Smith and these guys were like, oh, Philadelphia's the best thing since sliced bread. I said, no, Ben Simmons won't take a jumper. Now everybody's like, no, we've been sitting. No, Ryan Hollins was one of the first to say that deal wasn't going to work out. But I think Ben is an all-star in the league for years to come. But it's just, dude, he's got his work to do.
Popovich would get him to shoot the ball.
Popovich would bench his behind, too, the same way he did Tim and Tony Parker and all those boys also. Hey, Brett Brown ain't got that. Hey, he ain't got that type of – he ain't got it in him, dog. He don't have that type of rope, all right?
That would be kind of funny. It would be interesting. Like, yeah, Popovich would – he would bench him. If you're not going to shoot the ball, he'd bench you. That's true. Because everybody's treated the same. Man, you know, speaking of Popovich, let's start a rumor, man. I want you to take this and put it on your platform, okay? Popovich should coach New Jersey or coach Brooklyn. He should coach Brooklyn. I think his time has run out in San Antonio. I'm not saying he should be fired. I'm just saying that sometimes some people just need a fresh coat of paint. His politics, his demeanor, everything fits the Nets. What do you think?
Does it, though?
That doesn't work in Texas when he's doing.
I wouldn't say so.
I don't know.
You want to know why? Like, am I going to tell, like Kyrie Irving to play the pass and cut or run the through offense? Or, you know, like is Kyrie Irving, forget, Kyrie's a bad man. He got a ring. He got all that jazz. KD does, too. You're going to tell him, like, hey, man, pass the ball and cut, dog. Like, that's not necessarily going to work. The Spurs system is you have a synergy between five players on the floor that can score, can cut, can make moves. When I had a workout in San Antonio, they said, hey, man, we got the 0.5 rule. The 0.5 rule means when you catch the basketball, you have a decision to make in half of a second to dribble, to pass, or to shoot. Do not hold the basketball. How in the world are you going to tell Kyrie Irving and KD that? Now, do I think that Popovich is a bad coach? Heck no. Mm-hmm. Popovich can go to another situation, per se. Like, Rick Carlisle ain't going there. But, like, you gave him a young star like a Luka Doncic there. If you give him a Zion Williamson with the Pelicans or a team that has a lot of good players, but nobody that's necessarily great, that could be a thing. DeMar DeRozan was used to having the basketball in his hands, and you say, well, pass and cut. LaMarcus Aldridge really demanded to just sit on that left block and post up and shoot mid-range jumpers rather than three-point shots. So you have to give him stars that are going to work. And when he lost Kawhi Leonard, a guy who fit the system, who was the heir to the throne, you didn't get the best things back in return. You didn't get equal value. And it even wasn't that DeMar's not a star. That system didn't fit what he does best. So if I'm Greg Popovich, I'm looking for a young star to build off in a system that's going to trust what he sees, because his vision may not be the same. Dude, John, the last thing I'll say to this, when I played in Europe, the pass and cut central, because they're not as skilled, so they have to beat you with the three and the passing and cutting and all that, all right? They have to play a different brand of basketball. You know the only team that they look up to? San Antonio. Greg Popovich is king in Europe. Everybody wants to copy what he's doing, and that's why they've had success, but Greg has to get a star that fits that type of system.
I just know that if I'm KD and Kyrie, I want to be coached. And I won't be coached by the best. Like they can't mess up my game. I'm already great. I just want someone to enhance it. but you know,
I think that's Ty Lue. I think that's Ty Lue. He's had I played for Ty Lue, bro, twice in Los Angeles and with the Celtics. Tyronn Lue has the ability to talk to stars the way they need to be talked to. I've seen him get on Kevin Garnett in big moments. I've seen him cuss out Blake Griffin. I've seen him talk to Chris Paul. I've seen him get on Ray Allen and Paul. Like, I've seen him talk to all these guys about what they need to be doing for the team to have success. I'm not saying it was demonstrative, but it was real talk. He was able to talk to LeBron James. I think Ty Lue is the guy where he still has a player's respect. He's sound defensively, and he's had success with Kyrie also. Keep that in mind. So I think from that perspective, it's a Ty Lue. It's a Mark Jackson. I'm not saying that Pop ain't got his stripes, and I'm sure he and KD have some Olympic, and even Kyrie have some Olympic success there. But as far as in the NBA, I think that's more Ty or Mark Jackson, man.
Yeah. Lastly, and I appreciate your time, I just wanted to get your thoughts about the Rockets with Russell Westbrook. We continue to see players, and this is, Ryan, unfortunately, this is just part of the sports landscape here. There's going to be cats that's just going to catch this COVID-19 and have to be quarantined and then come back to the team. And so, and I saw Harrison Barnes, he tested positive with Sacramento. So this is a thing here. And with the Rockets, it's one of the more intriguing teams in the NBA because of how they've tried to go small here. So what are your thoughts on the Rockets once Russ comes back with Harden?
Is it an ideal situation? No, not at all. Your star missing with COVID. If he was going to miss, I would say maybe this is the deadline for a star to be missing with COVID, because the last thing you want is Russell Westbrook to be getting COVID-19 in the middle of the playoffs. And I know there's been a few people that have gotten COVID twice, but it's very unlikely. And who knows? Russ, maybe, you know, he may be still be working out. He may be asymptomatic. I don't know his exact diagnosis. So I think this is an ideal time to get it. I've talked to him earlier in the summer. I know he's been busting his butt all summer long and working out. But if you're going to have success for the Rockets, you need A++ games out of Russell Westbrook. You need A++ out of James Harden. That's the only way on God's green earth that they have a chance to compete and win. And they are a team that's one of the more intriguing teams that I've ever seen, because they're going to be a headache to guard if they knock down the three ball, Jonathan.
Well, I'm looking forward to this restart. And if I'm Adam Silver, by the way, if there's no Beal, if there's no Bradley Beal, there's no Wizards. Just slide him off of there. Just slide him out. You didn't need him to start with. You didn't need no Wizards on their team.
Hey, but you know what? Hey, there's a Wizards fan base that just wants to see their team go out and play. Now, you'd like to see him compete, but like, you want to see basketball. There's something to end the year on. And ask that regional Wizards TV package if they want to get a couple of more of their games off, you know. So I'm sure the Wizards fan base will enjoy it. But, you know, maybe Jonathan Hood may be a little rough on him, man, for not showing up.
I could just see Clinton Yates now, like, yo, bro, Shabazz Napier, though. Man, he's the best. I can't wait to see him. Bradley's out. We got Napier. It's all good, fam. That's right, kiddos. I mean, so I can see that being a thing. Oh, all right, man. Gosh. I love what you and Haywood are doing on that podcast. You're having fun, and I enjoyed that. It's great content.
Hey,
great content.
No, I appreciate it. And we're on CBS Thursdays also. We made it to the big times like you, man. So make sure you check us out there. We'll be on Thursdays, and it's a really cool deal, man. Trying to build the momentum. Trying to be like you one day, man.
On the CBS Sports Network. So are you wearing the eye jackets? I can't wait for you to wear the CBS eye jacket. It's going to be great.
No, we can't wear eye jackets at home. We're supposed to be like the cool guys. Like, if I call a game, I put on the eye jacket. I don't wear the eye jacket at home.
I think you should wear it.
Oh,
I
mean, my Jim, God.
How do you think Jim Nance became Jim Nance? He's walking around his house with nothing else but the eye jacket. Of course.
Oh, my God.
He's Jim Nance. Just telling you.
Oh, my God.
All right, man. So, as always, I appreciate it, man. Let's talk in season.
All right, brother. You already know. Anytime.
It's Ryan Hollins with us as we talk about the NBA and the bubble situation. It's tempting fate. It's happening. But the NBA restart is right around the corner with all 22 teams. And we've been talking about it right here on UTH.
This is Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports. This is Under the Hood on ESPN 1000. Follow at TweetJHood on Twitter.
Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000. Chicago's home for sports.
We will preview the NFC North coming up at 8 o'clock right here on ESPN 1000 with the Summer of Football. You know, as you well know, there is a distinct difference between the North and the South in this country, and the way things are run, the way the people react to things, everyone's not the same. It's a difference, especially when it comes to college football. So, me living in Big Ten country and watching college football, the Big Ten and out west in the Pac-12, they look at the world maybe differently than the South. And the SEC really wants to make sure that they will be cleared enough through COVID-19 to be able to have fans in the stands and have college football. You notice in the Big Ten, clearly Commissioner Warren was like, okay, we're just going to do just conference only and just have games in the Midwest. And in the Pac-12, they did the same thing. Like, okay, we'll just have conference games. We will not have non-conference games and zigzag across the country. But the SEC in their football season, and again, Monday was supposed to be a decision, and then it says no decisions, according to Harry Lyles from ESPN. No decision have been made regarding the SEC football season, but the conference announced today that it will postpone the start of volleyball, soccer, and cross-country competition at least through August 31st. The SEC had an announcement that the delay of the competition will include all exhibition and non-conference games, and that any rescheduling of non-conference contests impacted by the postponed start of the fall seasons in volleyball, soccer, and cross-country will be determined by each school. It's just, you know that COVID-19 is here, and the Big Ten and the Pac-12 did something a little bit differently than most. They were the first to say, yeah, let's just travel in close proximity in the Midwest if we can, in our own conference, so we don't have to travel so much because we don't know what the fall will bring. The SEC, we like our college football. Let's just wait and see what happens. That's just the way it is. Listen, I'm an SEC fan. I'm a Georgia fan. And so I understand, but it's just kind of funny how some people look at something, you know, one thing, and they look at it differently than others in the world. COVID-19 is here. And the point is that you're trying to figure out how to be able to navigate through it. Paul Feinbaum, who is the college football maven here at ESPN, said that this time right now, pretty big.
The next 2 weeks could be the most important 2 weeks in the history of college football, because either way they go, the decision could be cataclysmic. If they decide not to play, they will lose hundreds of millions of dollars. Many athletic departments will not exist. And if they foolishly go ahead without having the facts and without having any sort of protocol in place, which right now I'm afraid they don't have one, they could blow up the sport forever. So it is a Sophie's choice. It's going to be watched very closely. And guys, all the political conversation on either side is not going to make any difference. But the spotlight, while everything else is going on, NFL, MLB, the NBA, the most devastatingly difficult decision lies in the hands of the people that run college football. We just can't figure out who those people are right now.
So the thoughts from Paul Feinbaum, and it is very, very important to see exactly what happens with college football in the summer and the fall. Will it be a spring sport? Big questions about maybe college football will start in the spring of 2021 because of COVID-19. We'll keep our eyes on it. Summer of Football, as we preview the NFC North, is next.
This is Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.